Ladies and gentlemen, the Columbia Workshop, under the direction of Irving Reese, presents as its 40th program, Paul Revere, an original play for radio by Stephen Vincent Benet. One of America's outstanding poets and writers, Stephen Vincent Benet, is especially remembered for his epic poem, John Brown's Body, which was awarded the Pulitzer Prize in 1928. Students of radio believe that it is giving rebirth to the lost art of the storyteller, and it is significant that in writing his first work for the medium, Mr. Benet uses this device to tell us, in prose, a charming legend of the American Revolution. The Columbia Workshop is proud to present Stephen Vincent Benet's first original play for radio, Paul Revere, featuring Parker Fennelly in the leading role.
This is what I call solid comfort. Sitting in front of a fire with your family when your work's done for the day. How are you, granddaughter?
Oh, fine, grandfather. I've got about a million questions to ask you.
Well, we'll take up the first 100,000 or so.
Well, first there's an arithmetic problem. I don't think we'll do that.
Why not?
Well, of course, you're awfully clever, grandfather. But this is about those three people digging a ditch. A, B, and C.
Oh, yeah, I know them.
And A digs twice as fast as B.
Yeah, he always did, to the best of my recollection. I wish I could hire that fella A to work on our place. He'd have the Panama Canal dug in less time than it takes me to grab a shovel.
But C digs only a quarter as fast as B.
I know C, too. Any time I get a man to chop wood, it always turns out to be C. Well, now, I'd love to do that problem for you. I'd just love it. But ain't you studying anything else at that school of yours?
Oh, of course, grandfather. Chemistry and French and choral and group coordination.
Oh, dear.
And American history.
That's good.
Why, did you know about American history, grandfather?
Well, I can't say I know so much about the dates and such, but there's some stories I used to know. Oh, shucks, I guess you wouldn't call them history, though.
What kind of stories, grandfather?
Well, you see, there was an old fella in town when I was a boy. He used to sit out in front of the store in the cool evening and tell stories, and we'd all gather around and listen. We used to call him the oldest inhabitant, and the Kelly was, too. I tell you, the want of character that you could mention that he couldn't tell you something about. Something that wasn't in the books, mind you. Of course, it was legends and tall stories.
They weren't true?
Well, they weren't, and yet again they was. Now, you take the story he'd tell about Paul Revere, for instance.
Oh, I know all about Paul Revere. He wrote to Lexington and Concord and said, "The British are coming." And Longfellow wrote a poem about him. And they hung out lanterns in the old North Church and said, "One if by land and two if by sea." And he was a silversmith, too.
Yeah, that's all right. Except that Paul Revere never got to Concord, though he did warn the folks in Lexington. And the lanterns weren't lit for him. He started from the Boston side. But the way my old fella told it, the whole thing was mixed up with a fella called Lige Butterwick and his tooth.
His tooth?
Mm-hmm.
But what did somebody else's tooth have to do with Paul Revere's ride?
Well, Paul Revere, you know, was a kind of a jack-of-all-trades. And silversmithing, that wasn't all that he done. Oh, shucks, I don't know if there's any truth in the story, but there's this much truth. There's this much. Anytime you have something stirring happen, like a revolution, there's a lot of just ordinary folks around that don't know just what's happening till after it's happened. You remember that when you read history.
I will.
Yeah. There's the heroes and the clever folks, and then there's a million large Butterwicks that can't make head nor tail of things. They just go around living and dying through all the cataclysms and the earthquakes. Now, this is the way I used to hear the story about him told. There was a fellow called Lige Butterwick, lived about 5 miles from Lexington, Massachusetts. That was just before the American Revolution broke loose. And what with one thing and other, times was boiling and seething. But Lige Butterwick, he worked his farm and he didn't pay much attention. Well, everything went along for him, the way it does for most folks. Till one April morning in 1775, he waked up with a toothache. Being New England, he didn't pay much attention to it first. He'd never had no trouble with his teeth before. But he mentioned it that evening at supper time, and his wife, she got a bag of hot salt for him.
Hot salt?
Hot salt. He held it up to his face, and it seemed to ease him. But he couldn't hold it there all night, of course. And next morning, the tooth hurt worse than ever. So, finally, he took the horse. He rode into Lexington town, have it seen to. Well, when he got to Lexington, he noticed that the people there seemed kind of excited. There was a lot of talk about muskets and powder and about a couple of men called Hancock and Adams that were staying at Parson Clark's. But he didn't pay much attention. He Set right out for the horse doctor's as being the likeliest man he knew to pull too. Well, the horse doctor, he took one look at it and he shook his head. I can pull her, Lige, he says. I can pull her all right. But she's got deep roots, and she's got strong roots, and she's going to leave an awful hole when she's gone. Now, what you really need, though it's taken away my business, of course, he says, is one of these here artificial teeth to go in that hole. Artificial teeth, says Lige. Where in Tunkey am I going to get one of them in a town like Lexington? Why, you'll have to go to Boston for it, says the horse doctor. And he sighed, for he was kind of a gloomy man, you know. He says there's a fellow called Revere that fixes him there, and they say he's a boss workman. Well, gracious, it's something I hadn't thought of, says Lige, but that tooth's got to come out before I go stark staring crazy. And if Revere's the man, he's the man. So I'll just take that prospectus of his you got there, and I'll go to him. I've wasted the morning already, might just well waste the rest of the day. So he gets on his horse again, starts out for Boston. And going by Parson Clark's, he sees two men talking in the parson's front room. Now, one is a tallish, handsomish man in pretty fine clothes, and the other one's shorter and untidy with a, well, kind of a bulldog face. But he don't pay much attention to them. He just rides ahead to Boston. He'd come to get his tooth fixed, and be in New England, he meant to do it. Well, when he got there, he stopped in a tavern for a bite and a sup. Of course, it was long past his dinner time. And it seemed to him that things there got even more curious. Nice weather we're having these days, he says, in kind of a friendly way to the barkeep. It's bitter weather for Boston, says the barkeep, in an unfriendly voice. And a low kind of a growl goes up at that from the boys in the back room. Well, of course, that don't help Lige's toothache none. But being a sociable fellow, he keeps on. He says, maybe for Boston, he says, but out in the country, we'd call it good planting weather. The barkeep, he just stares at him hard. I guess I was mistaken in you, he says. It is good planting weather for some kinds of trees. And what kinds of trees was you thinking of, says a sharp-faced man at Lige's right. He gives him a dig in the ribs. Well, now that you ask me, says Lige, but he can't even finish before that red-faced man, he digs him in the ribs again. The liberty tree, says the red-faced man, and may it soon be watered in the blood of tyrants. True blue Britons and hearts of oak, says the sharp-faced man, and God save King George and loyalty. And with that, it seemed to Lige Butterwick that the whole tavern kind of riz up at him.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was kicked and pummeled and mauled and thrown into a corner and yanked out of it again with that red-faced man and the sharp-faced man square dancing over his prostrate form. And finally, he finds himself right out in the street with half of his court gone galley west. Well, says Lige to himself, I always heard city folks was crazy, now I know it. And to think of a fight like that starting over trees. And then, you know, he noticed that sharp-faced man was alongside of him, trying to shake his hand. And the sharp-faced man had the beginnings of a beautiful black eye. Nobly done, friend, says the sharp-faced man, and I'm glad to find another true-hearted loyalist in this pestilent, rebellious city. Well, I take them expressions very kind, says Lige Butterwick, but I'd take it even kinder if you'd tell me what this is all about. The sharp-faced man, he looked at him. Brother, he says, kind of mournfully, brother, you can't be as stupid as you look. It ain't in nature. Tell me, where do you hail from? Why, out Lexington way, says Lige. Perfectly truthful, you know. And he says, I'm looking for a fella called Paul Revere. Paul Revere, says the sharp-faced man, just as if that name had bit him. And then he began to smile. It wasn't a pleasant smile. Oh, it's Paul Revere you want, says he. Well, I'll tell you how to find him. You go up to the first British soldier, you see, and you ask the way. He'll tell you. But, he says, you better give the password first. Password, says Lige. Yeah, says the sharp-faced man. You just say to that British soldier, any lobsters for sale today?
Lobsters?
Lobsters. And then you ask for Mr. Revere. But why do I ask about lobsters, says Lige Butterwick. Well, you see, the sharp-faced man says, the British soldiers, they wear red coats. So they like being asked about lobsters. You try and see. Then he went away with his shoulders shaking. Well, that seemed awful queer, Lige Butterwick, but no queerer than the other things that had happened so far. So he looked for a British patrol, and he found it, and he stepped up to them just as bold as brass. I beg your pardon, he says, but could you tell me? And then he remembered the password. Oh, he says, any lobsters for sale today? Well, sir, no, sir, no, was the words out of his mouth, and them soldiers took after him, and they chased him clear down to the walls before he could get away.
Gee.
Yeah. At that, he only managed it by hiding in an empty tar barrel. When he got out of that, he was suddenly a sight for sore eyes. Well, I guess that couldn't have been the right password, he says to himself. and he tried to rub some of the tar off with his handkerchief. Says these city people can't make a fool out of me, though. I come here to get my tooth fixed, and get it fixed I will. And just then, mind you, he see a sign on a shop at the end of the wharf. The sign says, P. Revere, silversmith. And under it, in small letters, it says, large and small bells cast order. Engraving and printing done in job lots. Artificial teeth, sculptured and copper boilers mended. All branches of goldsmith and silversmith work and revolutions put up to take out. Express service Tuesdays and Fridays to Lexington, Concord, and Pints West. Well, sir, says Lige Butterwick to himself, now maybe I can get my tooth fixed. And he marched right up to the door. Paul Revere, he was sitting behind the counter, putting the final polish on a silver bowl. Man of, 40-odd he was, with a quick, keen face, you know, and snapping eyes. He was wearing American clothes, all right, but there was a French look about him. For, of course, his father was a Polish Revoir, you know, from the island of Guernsey, and from French Huguenot stock. But they changed the name to Revere when they come to Boston. Now, it wasn't such a terrible big shop, but it had silver pieces in it that people has paid thousands for since. Well, there was quite a few customers when Lige Butterwick first come in, so he hung back for a while. And the talk he heard went something like this.
Mr. Revere, I'm so disappointed, so terribly disappointed.
Disappointed, madame?
Yes, in my new silver service. You sent it back yesterday, and when I took it out of the box, I could have cried.
Oh, it is I who am disappointed, madame. But what is the matter? It must have been carelessly packed. I will speak to my boy. Was it badly dented?
Oh, no, it wasn't dented. But I wanted a really impressive silver service. I certainly paid for the best.
For the best? I have given you the best work of which Paul Revere is capable, madame. It was in my hands for 6 months, and I think they are skillful hands.
Oh, I know you're a competent artisan, Mr. Revere.
Artisan, madam. Artisan. I am a silversmith and the son of a silversmith. To be that is to be an artist.
Well, I don't know about artists, but I know I wanted a real silver service, something I could show to my friends. And what have you given me? Oh, I don't say that it isn't good silver, but it's as plain and simple as a picket fence.
I hope so, madam.
You hope so? Hoity-toity, you hope so?
Just 1 minute, madam. I must speak to Mr. Revere.
Where?
Mr. Revere, these last engravings of the Boston Massacre are selling like hotcakes. Can you give me 25 for my New York correspondence? I've had at least a dozen inquiries.
My boy will find them for you. William.
Yes, master?
See if we have 25 massacres for this gentleman. If we haven't, I must run off a new batch tonight. You better look at the plate, too, William.
Yes, master.
Now, madame, you were saying...
Saying? I was saying I was never so insulted in my life. Why, there isn't even as much as a lion and a unicorn on the cream jug. And I told you I wanted the sugar bowl covered with silver grape.
There will be no lions or unicorns on any of my silver, madam. And as for those pot-bellied sugar bowls crawling with fruit and ribbons, grand Dieu de Dieu, I am a silversmith, not a milliner.
Oh!
Mr. Revere.
Excuse me, madam.
Sons of Liberty. Yes. Powder already. Keeping watch.
Tell them to wait for the signal. And the sexton of North Church.
Right. Adams and Liberty.
Adams and Liberty. Now, madam, you were saying...
I was saying that I am completely there. What is the price of this silver rattle?
25 shillings, madam. Genuine coral.
25 shillings? 25 shillings? Oh, well, it's rather sweet. But 25 shillings? Tell me, is it guaranteed, Mr. Revere?
Against the normal efforts of normal infants, madame, yes. But I have heard tales of your boy, madame. An infant Hercules. I don't know if I really could venture
yes,
to
yes, guess. Jack is really very strong for his age. Do you know what he did the other day? He
as a special concession, 23 shillings, madame, and a guarantee for 3 months.
Yes, all right, I'll take it.
Wrap it up for the lady, William.
Yes, master.
And now, madame, what can I do for you today?
What can you do for me today? You have done it, Mr. Revere. It has been done, I tell you. I am sending your hideous silver back tomorrow. Not an ornament on it. Not so much as a vine leaf. All as plain and simple and bare as the hills and rocks of New England. And I'm to set that before my friends? Not while my name is Floribel Carpenter and I'm an Englishwoman.
Madam.
Good day, madam.
Good day. What? Good day. The fellow's bowing to me as if I paid him a compliment.
You have. Plain, simple, bare as the hills and rocks of New England, graceful as the boughs of her elm trees. Ah, if my silver were only like that, indeed. That is what I wish to make it.
What?
As for you, madam.
What?
With your lions and unicorns and grapevines and all your nonsense of bad ornaments done by bad silversmiths.
Mercy!
You imported bad teeth and your imported British manners.
Why, he's actually putting me out of the door!
she's scuttling away like an angry turkey. Oh, alack. And I worked 4 months on her service. And who's to pay for it now? But she shouldn't have insulted my silver. William.
Yes, master?
Never lose your temper, William. Never. It's very bad practice.
Yes, master.
Mine's French, you see. That makes the difference. And William.
Yes, master?
Never argue with a customer. How often have I told you that, William?
Almost every day, master.
And how often do I argue with a customer?
Almost every day, master.
I was afraid so. And yet, can't they see that silver ought to be beautiful in the shape itself, not the ornament? Can't they see we're making new things in this country? New silver, new ideas, perhaps a new nation, a new design. Ah, well, be off with you, William, and put up the shutters. We're closed for the day. Is there any message from Dr. Warren?
No, master.
Not yet. And Hancock and Adams still at Lexington, and the redcoat regulars disembarking from the ship. I wish I had sure news. We must wait till we're sure to warn them. Ah, but waiting's a weary business.
Please, master.
Yes, William?
Will they hang Mr. Hancock and Mr. Adams if they catch them?
They might, William. They might. But let's hope some good friend will warn Hancock and Adams first.
Yes, master, but... Master...
Yes, William?
Suppose you warned them, master. Would they hang you then?
They'd have to catch me first, William. By the way, are my riding boots clean?
Yes, master. And Mrs. Revere says the next time you ride to Lexington, will you take a box of liniment along? And be sure to rub yourself with it when you get there. She says it's a muddy road, and she doesn't want to have you around the house with sciatica if she can help it.
Thank you, William. But I take something more important than liniment with me if I ride to Lexington. Well, we'll lock up now.
Yes. But I'm still here. Great
Adams and Liberty, where did you come from, my friend? Did you spring up out of the ground?
Oh, Mr. Revere. It is Mr. Revere, ain't it?
I think it is.
Yeah. I just sat down for a rest while you was busy with your customers.
Oh.
And my tooth stopped hurting, so I guess I must have dozed off. Anyhow, now...
Well, my friend, I'm very sorry, but it's after hours. I'll have to ask you to come back in the morning.
Oh, no, it won't wait till the morning. Horse doctor told me so.
Well, what won't wait till the morning?
A tooth.
A tooth?
Yeah.
What in heaven's name... You don't talk like a Boston man. Where do you come from?
Lexaway. You see this tooth?
Where?
Lexington, I said. Can't you hear me? This here tooth, right?
Lexington. Were you there this morning?
Of course I was. That's when I met the horse doctor.
Never mind the horse doctor. Were Mr. Hancock and Mr. Adams still at Parson Clark's?
Who?
Oh, great heavens, is there a man in the American colonies who doesn't know Mr. Hancock and Mr. Adams? Were there two men? Two men, I tell you, strangers, staying at Parson Clark's.
Well, as I rode past the parsonage...
Yes, yes, yes.
Seems to me there was two strangers there. A handsomish kind of a man in pretty good clothes. Mm-hmm. And another fellow looked kind of like a bulldog. Oh.
Hancock and Adams... Though Adams won't thank you for the description. So they're still there. Now listen, as you came to my shop, did you pass any redcoats?
No, I didn't pass them. 4 of them chased me into a tar barrel.
Yes, that's just the ordinary patrol. Any more?
Why, seemed to me as I went by, there was a whole parcel of them going toward the end of the common. They had flags and swords.
As I thought, they must be getting ready to march. Thank you, my friend. You've done me and the colonies an invaluable service. And now if you'll excuse me...
Wait, you can't run off like that. What about my tooth here? I come all the way from Lexington to have you fix it. Here's your prospectus. It says just plain as print.
Yes, but can't you understand? I do fix artificial teeth. But as for drawing real ones, well, I have done it once or twice, but it's hardly my trade. Oh, well. Open your mouth and I'll have a look.
Is it?
Wider. Still wider. Man, you have a jaw like an alligator. Do you feel...
Look. Do I feel it? Who wouldn't feel... Oh.
You may shut your mouth again.
Is it very bad, Mr. Revere?
It's a compound agglutinated mesotropic infraction of the upper molar.
Oh, my glory.
There's no use at all in my trying to pull it tonight. Now, the thing for you to do is... you go to a tavern, get a good night's rest, and come back to me in the morning. And meanwhile, I'll give you... William?
Yes, Master?
Where is that liniment of Mrs. Revere's?
In the black chest, Master.
Good. I'll give you some liniment. And if the tooth hurts, you use it. Now let's...
There certainly is a handsome chest, Mr. Revere.
Yes, I keep some queer things in that chest. You see, silversmithing isn't my only trade.
What's this little bottle here?
Oh, that's a little experiment of mine. I call it Essence of Boston.
There's a good deal of east wind in it.
East wind? Shut up in a box. Say, are you a magician?
Oh, no, not exactly, but what with one thing and another, well, I like to keep my hand in. Here's some charms against love. Not very durable. I got them from a sailor. And here, in this little box...
Why, that's a pretty one.
I'm glad you like it. It's my own design. Can you make out the figures on it?
Seems like there's a tree.
Yes, a liberty tree.
And an eagle fighting a lion.
A British lion.
Yeah? What's all these stars around the edge? There's 10, 11, 12, 13 of them.
Oh, that was just my fancy. You could make a very pretty design with stars for a new country. If you wanted to, I sometimes thought of it.
The American Revolution. Handle with care and keep in a cool place. It feels kind of warm when you touch it.
Yeah, it might well. You see, there's something inside that box.
Gunpowder?
Gunpowder and war and the making of a new nation. And if it ever got loose...
Take it back. I don't want it.
A lot of people don't want it, but it's coming. Only it isn't quite time yet. No. Not quite yet.
No, I feel kind of faint. I guess I'll sit down here.
All right, now, I'll give you the liniment.
Yes, a message from Dr. Warden.
At last. Oh, I must go. Get my riding boots.
Yes, Master.
What
here,
about
take
me?
The box. Take the box and be off with you there in your pocket. Hurry, William, let him out.
Yes, well, Master.
Mr. Revere, I don't know if I'll go without having my tools.
Oh, hold on now, hurry, man. Hurry, man, come back in the morning and I'll attend to you then. Now, William, tell Mrs. Revere I may be away all night, but she's not to worry. I'll return as soon as I can.
Yes, Master.
William! William!
Yes, Master!
The liniment, you fool! The liniment! Oh, I gave him the wrong box. Great Adams and Liberty. He's got the American Revolution with him.
And so, according to the tale, Lige Butterwick went back to his tavern with the American Revolution in his pocket. Seems that Revere and William ran after him and called after him, but it was dark by the wharves and they missed him somehow.
Oh, what did he do with the revolution, Grandfather?
Well, now it's a considerable job being custodian of a revolution, even when it's shut up in a silver box.
Sure.
And it wasn't no time at all after Lige Butterwick had gone to bed before he began to feel creepy. He tossed and he turned, and he turned to where his clothes lay on the chair. His tooth had kind of settled down to a dull ache by now, and he didn't mind that much no more. But he minded this new feeling, oh, something extraordinary. Till finally he got up in the moonlight, and he went over to his court and shook it. And then he reached his hand in his pocket and he pulled out that silver box.
Ooh.
I'll say, at first he was so frustrated he didn't know what to do. But, being human, he was curious. He shook the box and he handled it. That just seemed to make it warmer, so he soon gave that up. Then he looked all over it for a keyhole. But there was no keyhole. And, of course, if there had been, he didn't have no key. Then he put his ear to the box and he listened hard. And it seemed to him that he heard, very tiny and far away, inside that box, the rolling fire of thousands of tiny muskets and the tiny, faraway cheers of many men. Hold your fire, he heard a voice say. Don't fire till you're fired on, but if they want a war, let it begin here. Then there was a roll of drums and a squeal of fifes. It was small, still, and far away. But it made him shake all over, for he knew that he was listening to something in the future, and something that he didn't have no right to hear. He sat down on the edge of the bed with that box in his hand. Now, what am I going to do with this, he says to himself. It's too big a job for one man. Well, he thought, kind of scared-like, of going down to the river and throwing the box in there. But when he thought of doing it, he knew he couldn't. And then he thought of his farm out near Lexington and the peaceful days. Once the revolution was out of that box, it'd be an end to that. That made him want to get rid of that box more than ever. Then he remembered what Revere had said when he was talking with the woman about the silver. That thing about building a new country and building it clean and plain. Why, I ain't a Britisher, he thought. I'm a New Englander. And maybe there's something beyond that. Something people like Hancock and Adams know about. And if it has to come with the revolution, well, I guess it has to come. We can't stay Britishers forever here in this country. He listened to the box again. Now there wasn't any shooting in it. Just a queer tune played on a fife. He didn't know the name of that tune, but it lifted his heart. Get up. Sort of slow and heavy. I guess I'll have to take this back to Paul Revere, he says. Well, first place he went was Dr. Warren's. Having heard Revere mention it, but he didn't get much satisfaction there. Took him quite a while to convince them that he wanted a spy. And when he finally did, all they'd tell him was Revere had gone over the river to Charlestown. So they went down to the waterfront, looking for a boat. And the first person he met was a very angry woman.
An angry woman?
No, she says, you don't get no boats from me. There was a crazy man long here an hour or so ago, and he wanted a boat too. And my husband was crazy enough to take him. And then, do you know what he done, she says? No, ma'am, I don't know, says Lige Butterwick. Why, he made my husband take my best petticoat to muffle the oars with, so they wouldn't make a splash when they went past the British ship, she says, pointing out where the man of war Somerset lay at anchor. My best petticoat, I tell you, she says. And when my husband comes back here, he's going to get a piece of my mind. Was his name Revere, says Lige Butterwick? And was he a man, a 40-odd, keen-looking and kind of Frenchy? I don't know what his right name is, she says, but his name is just mud with me. My best petticoat swimming in that nasty river. And that's all he could get out of her. All the same, he managed to get aboard at last. Story don't say how. And row across the river. Well, the tide was a young flood, and the moonlight bright on the water, and he passed right under the shadow of the Somerset, right where Revere had passed. And when he got to the Charlestown side, he could see the lanterns in North Church, though, of course, he didn't know what they was. Then he told the folks at Charlestown he was after Revere. They got him a horse, and so he started to ride. And all the while, that silver box was just a-burning in his pocket.
Ooh.
Yep. Well, he lost his way, more or less, I guess, as he well might in the darkness, and it was dawn when he come into Lexington by a side road. Now, the dawn in that country's pretty, with the dew still on the grass, you know. But he wasn't looking at the dawn. He was feeling that box burn his pocket and thinking hard. And all of a sudden, he reins up his tired horse, for there on the side of the road was two men carrying a trunk, and one of them men was Paul Revere.
Oh!
Yep, Paul Revere. They looked at each other, and Lige began to grin, for Revere was just as dirty and mud-splashed as he was himself. He'd worn Hancock, mind you, and he'd worn Adams all right. But then on his way to Concord, he got catch for the British and turned loose again. So he'd gone back to Lexington to see how things was there. And now he and this other fella were saving a trunk of papers that Hancock had left behind so they wouldn't fall into the hands of the British. Well, Mr. Revere, says Lige, you see, I'm on time for that little appointment about my tooth. And by the way, he says, I've got something for you. And he takes that silver box out of his pocket. And then he looks over toward Lexington Green and he catches his breath. For on the green, there's a little line of Minutemen, neighbors of his, as he knows, and in front of them, the British regulars.
British regulars?
British regulars. And even as he looks, there's the sound of a gunshot, and suddenly, smoke wraps the front of the British line, and he hears them shout as they run forward.
Ooh.
Well, Sir Lige Butterwick, he takes that silver box, and he stamps on it with his heel, and with that, the box breaks open, and there's a dazzle in his eyes for a moment, and a noise of men shouting, and then it's gone. You know what you've done, says Revere, breathing deep? You've let out the American Revolution.
Gee.
Well, says Lige Butterwick, I guess it was about time. And I guess I'd better be going home now. I've got a gun on the wall there, and I'll need it. But what about your tooth, says Paul Revere? Oh, a tooth. A tooth is a tooth, says Lige Butterwick. But a country is a country. And anyhow, it stopped aching. Yep. All the same, they say that Paul Revere made a silver tooth for him after the war. At least, that's the way they tell it, but of course I wouldn't vouch for it.
You have heard of the 40th program in the Columbia Workshop series, Paul Revere, an original play written especially for radio by Stephen Vincent Benet. Parker Fenley was featured in the role of the storyteller. Edgar Staley played Paul Revere. The workshop programs are arranged and directed by Irving Reese. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.